Paolo Maldini and Paul Gascoigne. Yeah. Bring you.
Phoenix City!
Welcome to Phoenix City for another week. We have a full range of podcasts here tonight. Frosty, Dave and Cam are all here. How are we doing?
Good evening, Patrick. I'm very well, thank you.
I'm well.
I'm okay.
And Frosty and Dave are sharing a microphone tonight because we have special guest Des Buckingham joining us with a New Zealand football tracksuit on this time rather than a Wellington Phoenix tracksuit. How are you doing, Des?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
We got to say, the reason they're sharing the mic is because you didn't bring the right equipment, Patrick, not because Des is here.
No.
Someone only bought four microphones. That's the issue here.
That's not the issue at all. Well, I did bring four microphones, you're right.
So therefore, the issue is...
I don't mind you guys sharing a microphone because I never have to do it because I've got too much gear around me with the buttons and everything.
It's all fun and games until we whack heads trying to talk at the same time.
That's the fun part for me.
I think that's been done before.
To be honest, the worst part is when Frosty makes an excellent comment and forgets to lean into the microphone whatsoever and we just lose it. But
it'll be all right in this environment though because it's a bit...
Yeah, exactly.
Like background noise.
All right. How you been, Des? It's been about 16, 17 months since we last had you on the podcast, so it's been fairly busy for you with different jobs and the like. How you been going?
Good, thank you. It's been whirlwind. It's gone from living to 4 years in terms of living in Wellington to then being allowed to leave and take up another role back in the UK. Taking a phone call in over the Christmas period and taking a role back over. So two big moves in terms of the other side of the world in the past 12 months. So it's been exciting.
How long have you been back in New Zealand for?
Since the middle of February, so 2 months.
And you're based in Auckland now, around the Wellington?
At the moment, yeah.
At the moment. How much of a difference is that, doing the old Auckland commute rather than the cheeky Wellington commute in comparison?
I've tried staying out of it. I've moved into a place in, I'm going to get the pronunciation right, Whangaparoa.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. So I've moved up there. So it's 15 minutes north of the stadium where we're based out of New Zealand football. So I actually go against the traffic if I need to come in.
Perfect.
And the views are nearly as good as what I had when I was here.
Nearly, so, not
nearly,
quite.
Nearly.
Better than Stoke, I'm assuming.
And a view of a car park in Stoke.
So, yeah. So yes.
Yeah. Yes. All right, well, we'll jump quickly back to the Phoenix and get to more of a chat to you about all that kind of stuff a bit later on. But obviously we had a 2-1 win over Melbourne City at your workplace, QBE Stadium, over the weekend. Fair to say, I didn't see this one coming at all.
Can I just say?
Cam did.
Oh, I really f***ing did.
Yes, you
Thank
did.
You. It wasn't quite the 4-1 I thought it was going to be, which I told Dave and he put money on, but... I'll take the win anyway.
Did you put money on
To be fair, we would have made quite some money back. Cam came into the pub and said, we're going to win this tonight. I said, by how much? And he goes, 3 or 4-1. So I put $1 each on those scores. One was paying $120, the other was paying $95. So if it had come in, could have been all right. Yeah. We weren't far off, to be honest.
Yeah. You weren't far off the 3-1, that's for sure. At times in that second half, it looked like we could have scored a bucket load, although we could have also dropped the 3 points and only got one right at the end.
Yeah.
But I was impressed with this performance, and it was a really nice performance to wrap out the season. You were there at the game, I hear, Des.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
What were your thoughts on the performance as a whole in the context of a not-so-great season?
I thought it was deserved based upon the last five games that I'd seen, especially since Chris has come in. I think I've watched all the games this season. I think especially the last five against the Jets initially, where they lost 1-0. The chances and chances and chances to take the game didn't quite happen. Again, over in Brisbane, same thing. You know, a bit more freedom. I think Roy in that free role gives them so much of a threat, and I think the opposition worry about that. And then it all seemed to come together on the final game. And I think I was really pleased for Chris initially, because like I said, it was the fifth game where he won a result, but also for the players that you could see what it meant to them at the end. They didn't want to finish bottom, and they put themselves in a position not only then to give them 3 points and take themselves above Mariners, but Ernie then helped out with the later result with the 8-2. So
a very emphatic result.
Yeah.
There was no biting the fingernails until the end of the final whistle in that game. It was all over very quickly, which was nice. Anyone else's thoughts about this game?
You're welcome for the reverse curse.
What did you say last week?
Oh, I said Dario was going to get an 89th minute header.
Yeah, well, he was very close to doing so. Yep. And I've watched this back multiple times and can't quite work out how this one isn't a goal.
That's rusty on the post. Definitely.
But yeah, I thought obviously Sarpreet with the two goals, another outstanding performance from him.
He was outstanding, full stop.
Yeah,
he really was. A class above everything else that was around him, to be honest. Just the space he finds, the pass he finds. We talked about this multiple times on the pod about exactly those points, and the fact that he's putting goals together at A-League level, and which is obviously a massive step up from the Premiership level.
Yep.
It's just his skill and ability it excites me for what he's going to produce next season.
It's the same goals he was scoring at the ISPS Hand Premiership level, where he was scoring those curling goals outside the box that we've seen a couple of times from him, and he's just doing the same thing in the A-League, which is impressive to see, because as we know, it's quite hard to make that step up, especially in the space of 12 months like he has. So
I think the one thing that will, you know, probably show how much everyone's taking him more seriously come next year is you won't see anyone giving him time and space on that left-hand inside pocket where he can just get two steps and line up his left. It just won't happen.
But that's not a bad thing for us this season.
It's perfect.
I'm sure he's good enough as a player to adapt to that when it starts happening.
Yeah, but also if they're having to mark inside, it means that Burns is going to free up outside him, and then potentially they're going to have to shift across from the right-hand side, frees up Roy as well.
Yeah, we talked about it with his first goal where he smashes it into that top corner, and it, you know, it's exactly the goal we had seen him score the week before for the ISPS Hander side. And I think you're right, eventually he'll start having players marking him when he's in that sort of range, but it's only going to free up someone else unmarked now. And so depending on the personnel around him, that's only a good thing for us to have another attacking option in there that defenders are worried about. It just doesn't go badly for us. So that's going to be good to see next season when they do start transitioning to going, this guy's a real threat. It's only going to open up even more space around him, and he's good enough to see that and play the balls that'll use it. So
we mentioned this last week, but this season, the shining light of it has really been the fact that these young players have made the step up. I guess that kind of happened a little bit during your time at the club. Mm-hmm. You gave Sarpreet his first start and a couple of other young guys like that, but is it nice to see that they're kicking on that a little bit more, and instead of just being a 20-minute cameo at the end, actually putting in starting and solid performances?
No, it is. I said to Sarpreet when we was in Spain with him with the All Whites, Chris and I gave him his debut against Melbourne City last season, I think it was.
We know that game well.
I've heard. So we gave him that, and I said to him before he come on for the All Whites, I said, look, we Chris and I give you your debut. And it's now a pleasure to see you go on and make your All Whites debut, but it's much deserved. You know, the performances that he's put in, and he's scoring goals, which, you know, is like the cherry on top. Mm. But his actual performances around all of it, fantastic. And for me, he's now he's a starting player. And then alluding to your other players like Libby, I thought they had a fantastic matchup with Azani.
He did.
He played Azani out of the game.
Backing up from the week before against Victory, where he come up against, but when Troisi and George especially come on, the way he worked them out, and he took the ball off him and then played out, I thought it'd be a good battle with him and Azani. And Azani got the better of him for the first time. They got one-on-one.
Yep.
And it almost took that for Libby to recognise, okay, this is what you've got. And then I think he got the better of him as the game went on. And they actually shifted Azani across to the other side to get away from him at one point.
Which is a mark of respect for the defender, right?
Huge. Yep.
For a 17-year-old defender, that's huge.
Well, Tom Doyle was on the other flank, wasn't he? If you're moving someone to take Tom Doyle on.
No, Tom Doyle wasn't playing. I think he had a hamstring or a groin.
Probably.
Yeah, so...
Galloway
started on the right, and they had a change in the defence later on when Rossi came on.
Yeah, no comment about Galloway's ability.
anyway, the game obviously didn't start the way we wanted it to, where Fauna only does what he does and popped up and scored a goal in the 20th minute.
That felt like it was coming, to be fair. I thought City started the stronger of the teams. They certainly created more opportunity early doors, and it did feel like if anyone was going to score, it was going to be them. So it wasn't unexpected when it happened.
Yeah, it was different to the last game we played at the game against the Jets, where the Jets really didn't deserve their goal at all. We played them probably just slightly edging them for a half a football, and then Hoffman pops up and scores a goal. But this didn't feel like that. This felt like better team scored a goal, and I thought they were going to kick on and win this 3-0, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, it's actually what I was about to say. These last five games, you compare them to the rest of the season. When we've gotten behind, the heads have gone down and it's got worse and worse. By the end of the game, you're hoping for a mercy killing that the ref's just going to blow it up early. But it's like all these games, when we have gotten behind, these last five, it's like no one's gotten their head down. They've kept trying and they've worked even harder. Even if they haven't got the result, they're still working really hard at the 90th minute. It was great.
Yeah, even last week against the Victory, they didn't lose that game for want of trying. It was just the Victory stepped it up a lot in the last 10 minutes and the fitness wasn't quite there, rather than heads dropping as soon as that first goal went in, kind of thing. And it didn't happen at all this week, and it helps when you have a player like Sarpreet who can step up and score two goals. Let's talk about Cyprus goals in particular. First one.
That was fantastic.
Nicely taken goal.
Very nice.
Very, very nice. It was great piece of control to, and then find the space that he found in the box. And then the finish.
Pass too.
Oh, it was very nice. I think it was Roy that set that up from a breakdown on the left. But actually, the finish was brilliant. How he's actually spotted the gap that he's put that through, I genuinely don't know. It was just a beautiful piece of skill from him.
The second one, slightly lucky, you could say. You got a cheeky smile on your face, Des?
No, he's just looking at Tom Doyle. Tom. Who joined in from the left back position at the time?
I think that was Libby.
Was it Libby?
Yeah.
So you very rarely get your fullbacks high and joining in moves like that. And I think when they make those kind of runs, generally you tend to give it them because you probably only get three or four opportunities to do that and get him behind. So when he struck it, but then it took the ricochet. And like I said, you need a bit of luck. And he got it. So it was pleasing to see it crash in.
And this season we haven't had that kind of luck where it's literally gone every time it's gone the other way and it would have deflected out for a corner and then we'd have got nothing. So to see that happen was it was really nice.
Des, can you show your hand? Put your hand up, your left hand up. Nice little note on this. Plug Libby. You're getting a free meal for that.
That's from this afternoon's. That's from this afternoon's session. Yeah. No, I think his dad runs Bella Italia. I think. There's your plug.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does run Bella Italia. We're fans of Bella Italia. Yes. Sponsorship, please.
We've been angling for this for a little while.
Quite a good recording location. You know, cheeky little meal while we record.
Yeah, true.
Can we get his dad to jump in on the pod for a while?
This could be quite good. Yeah. This could be excellent. Speaking of luck, we rode the luck at the end with Dario's chance, and it would have felt like a fitting way to end the season for Dario Vidasic to pop up and consign us to the wooden spoon. But thankfully, that didn't happen, and here we are in ninth place, which is really nice to say. After that season.
You know what he would have done too if he'd scored.
What?
He would have just faked drinking tea.
Yeah.
He'd probably carrying a Kermit mask in his shorts then. Yeah.
You would have had to applaud that.
You would, actually. But now, you know what, mate? That felt like we deserved the win. And you could see the emotion in Greeny and Temps when they did get that over the line, that how much they wanted that result. And to be felt like they deserved that result.
Well, it was amazing how different ninth feels to tenth. I mean, we've been sitting in tenth for so long.
Was it week seven or something?
A tiny difference on the table. But, man, as a fan, it felt good. I can only imagine how good that felt for the coaches and the players to actually go, we didn't finish way down the bottom there. We've been there and we fought our way back. It might only be one spot, but that spot mattered to everyone. I know as a fan, it felt good to me, and I can only imagine it was 10 times, 100 times better for them.
It's just nice that someone's shitter than you. Like, it sounds, when you put it like that, it sounds a bit mean, but like...
Oh, and in such an emphatic way as well. 8-2, they were a lot shitter.
Yeah. And that result, let's move on to the rest of the early round now, but that result really felt like the Mariners were the worst team this season, and that us coming off the back of a win and then going off the back of an 8-2 loss, it seems like they're the club that has lots of work to do now rather than us. And it's amazing how 1 week can change that, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't say rather. I'd say as well, perhaps they've got a bit more than we do.
A bit more work,
Have you heard what they're going to be investing, how much they're going to be investing next year? The absolute minimum. They've already said they're only doing the 90% of the cap. That's it. So good luck at trying to recruit when you have already announced that. Well, so they're going to be pants next year, which is shit for the league, to be quite honest. But, you know, it means that we've got to lift our game even more just because they're not even going to be trying.
There is a way that they can do that, though, because they can recruit the young guys who do need have that opportunity to, you know, break into the league, but they aren't getting that opportunity elsewhere that may have the ability. They're prepared to take the opportunity that's there because they know it's not going to come elsewhere. So they may only be doing 90% of the cap, but they, if they play it right, and this is a plan for a 2 to 3 year plan rather than a we need success now, then they could still do okay with 90%.
This is the goals, which I'm going to blast through quickly because there's 10 of them. Joey Chapman, Rory Donovan, Riley McGree put the Mariners, the Jets 3-0 up. Connor Payne got one back, then Riley McGree got a second. Lachlan Jackson, Rory Donovan got his second. Riley McGree got his hat trick. Trent Bahaja got one back for Central Coast Mariners, and then Dim Tridos right at the end made it 8-2. The rest of the round,
I'd say that's the record for the most goals in an A-League game ever.
Yeah, the previous record was 8-1. There was a 5-4, a 6-3, and an 8-1. Not quite beating the 8-1 in terms of margin, but Sydney FC had a slightly less emphatic 1-0 win over the Melbourne Victory to wrap up their season. Who got the goal there? Was it Bobo? I think it was Bobo. Yeah. Must be Bobo. It is Bobo.
It's always Bobo.
Yeah.
Was he assisted by Majewski? Because it's always him as well.
Then the Brisbane Roar put themselves in a good position to make the top six by getting a 3-2 win over the Glory. Adam Taggart and a Jacob Picker own goal for the Perth Glory, and then Onrekia got a double as well as Christensen to give them a 3-1 win, and that became very important because the Wanderers went down 3-2 to Adelaide, which meant that the Wanderers missed out in the top six at the expense of the Roar.
You might want to add in the whole VAR.
It's a red tackle. Oh, it's a red card.
Oh, totally red.
This is good VAR. This is referees missed something that's clear.
Yeah,
and he's got set off for it.
Nice little Squires bit about that today too.
Was it?
Yeah. Have a look at the cartoon. It's worth it.
It's cost Gumball's Gumball's gone today as well, hasn't he?
Yeah,
so that was big news. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody was really expecting that.
To be fair, I think Gumball might have had something to do with losing his job.
Yeah,
sure. It's all hearsay and rumours though. Until you can hear it from someone that was actually there.
Imagine he goes into the playoffs and wins a game, wins that first round of the playoffs against whoever's in third, Melbourne City.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, his prospect is much higher for next season. Those are the tiny little margins you're playing with as a coach.
Yes and no, but you have a look at how Fox had them playing at the beginning of the season, and they were doing quite well. And then Gombau's come in, and they've not done well, and they've gotten worse.
Wow. Yeah, sure. But at the same time, if it's a successful coach, and to the Wanderers, this season being making it through to the semi-finals would be a success, I would have said. When you lose your coach the week before the season starts, that would have been fine. So.
Yes, true, but I think Mr. Popovich is looking for work now.
Well, Ray Gatt says that he's not, so or not aiming for the Western Sydney job at least.
Oh, I think he'll be looking higher if he can.
Looking at a Sydney FC role.
Yeah,
but,
I would say that he's basically got that in that Wanderers one in his back pocket.
If he wants it.
That's his reserve.
That would cause some serious hot takes, wouldn't it? If Popper went to Sydney after Western Sydney, there'd be some unhappy faces.
It'd be entertaining.
Yeah.
Yes, no, around the table very quickly. Maybe not from New Dez, but yes, no, gone ballot Phoenix. I'm a no.
Based on what I've heard, no.
Dave?
Based on his previous stints, I would have said yes, but based on his current performance, no.
I'm a no.
You're not? Cool. The playoffs, which happened this weekend, that I forgot were a thing. Melbourne City taking on the Roar on Friday night, 9:50 p.m. our time, and then Sunday night at 8 p.m. New Zealand time, Melbourne Victory taking on Adelaide United. It's a 6 p.m. kickoff on a Sunday in Melbourne.
On Sunday?
Yeah.
Is it not Saturday night?
It's not Saturday night.
I'd say that's availability of grounds and other sports
potentially
playing at different
just
times.
TV clashes. It's probably Fox Sports fixing muscles at least.
But you know what? 6 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday night is a hell of a lot nicer than any later. You take that because you still get home in time to have an early night.
Home by 9 p.m.
Exactly.
I guess it's school holiday as well. So.
Yeah, so if they can take a leaf out of that and realise that those 7 o'clock games are rubbish, but if you chuck them at 6 o'clock or even 5:30, that will make a world of difference to people.
I wonder how much of it has to do with this, making sure that they can get time for pens as well.
Yeah, fair enough, because it could go all the way.
Yep. That'd be why it's not 7 p.m. probably.
Yeah.
The Phoenix Awards happened on Tuesday, and the three of you were all there.
Yes.
Cam, you were working.
I was.
Taking photos, very nice photos, good use of the flash, as opposed to what people have said on Facebook.
One person said on Facebook who has no understanding of anything.
Called you out for being a shit photographer, basically.
He did, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he deleted his comment after I commented back to him and said, and he said, oh, you need to turn down the red and the yellow. And I'm like, already have, buddy. Thanks.
Yeah. So, great times.
I'm not bothered.
I wasn't letting it slide without bringing it up on the pod because you guys ream me out often enough.
So yeah, no, fair
finally
enough.
Finally get the chance to throw something back and I was using it. You've got the list of award winners there, Cam.
I sure do.
Who won the awards? Who was player of the year?
So under 23, we'll go through as they were announced.
In order. All right.
Under 23 player of the year, very much deserved to Matthew Redenton, in my opinion. And he got my vote.
Yep, he got my vote.
I told him on the night that he got my vote. No, it looks like he's got the entirety of Phoenix City's vote, which is quite nice. Golden Boot was Andre Kaladinovic. Now, I've got a bit of a bone to pick with this award.
Golden Forehead.
Not because it went to him, because obviously he's scored the most goals, but the fact that it isn't a gold-coloured boot.
What? It's never been, actually.
It never has been.
No.
But just for, I don't know, for authenticity's sake, it should be a gold-coloured boot. Just my personal opinion.
A golden forehead for him.
Yes. He scored 3 with his foot, I think 6 with his head. So, I totally agree, but it should still be.
Did anybody smash his award after he won it this time? Because that's a thing that Yellow Tee has done in the past.
Oh, really? Who's that? You have to tell that story. You can't just bring that up without telling the story.
I think it was the 2012 awards. One of the FIFA party was looking at Paul Eiffel's Golden Boot Award and proceeded to drop it. And because it was made of glass, just a big chunk smashed off it, which was excellent.
Oh, wow. Did Yellow Fever pay for that to get replaced?
I have no idea. He probably thinks it's quite funny, knowing Paul Eiffel.
quite a trend of Yellow Fever breaking things at awards nights.
Breaking glass in particular,
You've done one of those.
He's done more than one.
I maintain that tray of champagne was not my fault.
Yeah.
It was an entire tray of champagne that smashed on the ground.
Entirely. The first thing you did when you walked into the ceremony was smashing an entire tray of champagne.
As I came in the door, they offered me champagne. I pick one up, and
did you pick one up?
The
or
waitress
did you just knock it out of her hand.
Not just one, all of them.
I heard you slapped it clean across the face.
He's just a shit drinker, basically.
Yeah. Everyone looked at me and just went, who else?
Yeah.
Continue on the list.
Cool. So volunteer of the year was Helen Mellon. For those that don't know, Helen's been with volunteering for the Phoenix since season two, I think.
2008, yeah.
10 years now. There's actually a couple more that have been there exactly the same, just a little longer than her as well. So, yeah, she does a lot for the club in her own time.
On
so
top of her, all the other stuff she does for football around the region too.
Exactly, so being a qualified referee as well.
She's one of the people on the referees committee. She's a referee assessor. She does a lot of work for North Wellington. So where she gets all her time from, I have no idea. But she does all the Phoenix stuff on top of that during the summer. So all deserved for Helen.
Yep. Goal of the year went to Roy for his Thunder against Brisbane. Yes, that's on purpose, Patrick.
I have to write down the time because I have to bleep out the word that you said.
Yes, you did. Which was, that was, again, what I voted for. I think it was the best goal of the season. It was absolutely stunner.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, though, Lewitsch doesn't score shit goals.
Oh, he scored goal, right?
He scored two of them, and both of them were in there.
No,
two's a pretty small sample, though, mate.
Yeah.
The first goal, absolutely, great strike. Yeah. The second goal, lucky.
But it was still in the top five of the year. What I'm saying is 100% true.
Which one would you have voted for, Des?
I'd have gone for his first one, but I think he lined about five or six up on the final game up in Auckland. Okay. Any chance he got within 20 yards, he was shooting.
Yep. He was doing that all season.
Yep. Players' player, which I think is probably one that the players want the most, went to Dylan Fox.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He needs to get a better fitting shirt because his physique was well and truly being shown off with the shirt he chose. You can probably imagine this for Foxy, Des.
Probably deliberate.
Absolutely deliberate.
Yeah.
He's showing off his physique. It's a much better physique than any of us around.
If I look like that, I'll be wearing shirts like that as well, mate. So
if you look,
if you look like that, you'd be spraying latex on yourself.
After being as big as I was, fucking A, I would. Okay, and fan of the year went to Matt Weldon Smith, which I personally think is probably the most deserved fan of the year we've had ever. To be fair,
Dale definitely didn't deserve his.
100% no. and there's been some fair awards go out to the people that have won them.
Totally.
However, none of them, and no one at all connected with any of the fan groups whatsoever, has done more for the club.
Totally, well deserved there.
And the look on his face when he realised it was going to him, he was just looking around with his gob open. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it was good. And a big thank you to his wonderful wife Lisa, who I had to contact on the morning to look after the kids so he could get away because they had a sick one, and she's just given birth to a second one. So thank you, Lisa. We appreciate it on Matt's behalf.
Totally.
Yeah, and player of the year went to, maybe a little controversially, went to Roy Krishna. So perhaps the second controversial one in the year.
It's done on the 3-2-1 system, right?
Yeah. It's done on the 3-2-1 system.
No offence, but Costa won last year. Like, this is a thing that can happen.
I did say that, the second one in a row, really, isn't it? So,
yes. And Dario was in the top three until the last game.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I'd actually mentioned that last week. I did actually question how many points Dario would have won before. Yeah. And those points were justified. He was our best player up to the point he landed.
Imagine if he'd won the vote, though. Oh. Like,
he was a long way off in the end. He was a long way off.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but by the time he got to the end, but he was comfortably in the lead after 10 games, and that was justified.
Yeah, totally.
He had a solid lead there, and it just drops away when he left the club.
I said it at the time that losing Rado was going to be a big loss long term, but losing Dario was going to be a big loss short term, and it was because the goals dried up. Cool. Not for the team in particular, but Kaladjerovic scored two goals once Dario left. So, I'm okay with Roy winning this. Across the whole season, he was excellent.
I mean, if Sarpreet had played more, I reckon he might have been for a shout if he'd played like he did for the entire season.
Yep.
Matt Redenton had to be in there for a shout. He was fantastic, as was Fox.
Yep.
I think they all had excellent seasons. So.
Fox for mine. He was.
I don't think it's on your list, but I believe that Lloyd Morrison, spirit of the club, went to Chris Greenacre.
Yep, that was just
again well deserved.
Yep.
No one exudes Phoenix more than Greeny, I don't think, and we all noticed that when we had him on the podcast, and he's just done the same thing over the last 5 weeks. So very happy to see him win that one.
It was really good to see that he was actually quite physically moved by receiving that. You know, didn't know Lloyd, but he was, you know, he feels it enough that was
touched. He is and embodies the spirit of the club. He does. He was around when there was that, you know, the family feel in the club and back in the days of Terry, and he's And it's just the attitude of the guy, the approachability of the guy, and it just him as a person sums up what everything you want it to be within that club. He's personally, this is just my opinion, that he's essential to the club moving forward. No matter what role you have him in, you need him in a role there.
What's he like in a coaching partnership? Because obviously you had that at the Phoenix when Ernie left, and then you've rekindled that partnership again for the upcoming period with the under-20s. He's your assistant. What's it like being in a partnership with Chris Greenacre?
Everything that's been said around this table and everything I've seen printed and spoken about Chris is true and more. I'm actually staying with him at the moment.
Oh, really?
I'm living with him. so we had a nice mandate and a curry night last night while Lindsay's wife, she was out. So it went back to sort of 12 months ago where we were spending as much time together. But he is just genuinely one of the nicest, isn't the word, humble, nicest, all those kind of words you want to put together. And when the opportunity comes to have him as an assistant, there was a few names chucked around, but as soon as his name came up, I said there is no one else better to work with, because like you said, the way he was, I didn't listen to him when he was on here,
yeah,
but that's him. There is no Chris as a coach, Chris as a person, Chris is Chris.
Totally.
And for me, you meet a lot of people in your life, he's up there with one of the best.
We'll kind of bring things over back to you and what you're doing now. So obviously you're coach of the under-20s with Chris as the assistant. How did that kind of come about? Did you see the job listing while you were over in Stoke and then decide that you wanted to come back and do it, or were you approached, or how did it happen?
I think the tie-in comes back to the end of last season. I'd been here 4 years and I didn't particularly want to leave. I'd built a life for myself
totally,
here,
yeah.
Friends and family. Daria obviously come in and took the job, and we ended up speaking, and he seen my role moving more towards of an analysis role, so 80% analysis, 20% coaching, and towards the back end of the season especially, there was a couple of people got in touch and approached to say, what's the deal with you? And my commitment was to the club. We still had a year left on the deal.
Yeah.
But when we spoke, and you know, you want to enjoy your job, you want to, you know, it's football's you know, you get 2-3 year deals in football, you know,
totally.
try buying a house or getting a mortgage on those kind of jobs. So we wanted to enjoy it, but also wanted some security to be able to go in and also continue improving yourself. You know, I hadn't got the job, so there were some areas that you obviously need to go and upskill, and being stuck behind a computer doing analysis wasn't what I wanted to do and wasn't going to help me get up money to where
totally.
I wanted to get to.
Yeah.
So Dario was good with me, as was Rob Morrison. Said I had this opportunity, so Stoke had approached me to go and do some stuff with their 23s. So I shifted over there, and like I said, I kept in touch with everyone back here, club-wise, friend-wise, family-wise. So then, yeah, when the opportunity come up, I see they just missed out on the World Cup qualifier, so I thought there might be some change coming up.
Yep.
New technical director in Andreas. And then, yeah, sort of Christmas time, just after Christmas, I took a call. And it sort of went from there, and then there was like an interview process that I think Chris might have spoken to you about.
Yep.
I think about 6 back and forth Skype calls with Andreas, and yeah, the 20s job was offered alongside the assistant always coach, and again it was an opportunity to come back to somewhere, like I said, I built a life for someone I didn't really want to leave.
Yeah.
At the moment it's slightly different than Wellington, it's based in Auckland.
Yep.
But also put yourself back in a frame where you know you're working to the highest level in the country. And that's from a personal perspective where you want to be.
I think you don't get that in England so much, because there's a saturation of coaches and so few jobs available. Whereas here, there's not quite the same number of coaches as, you know, especially ones that have a pro license, as we've found out very hard recently in the country. But I guess it's just a very different mindset, coaching in a small country where you can be one of the people who shape quite a lot rather than working in a under-23 setup at a club.
Yeah, I think there's the jobs in Europe or in England in particular, there's lots of them in terms of there's lots of 23 setups. With the money that's pumped in, I mean, they're spending $8 million a year on their academy system, which is 23s and reserves down.
Yeah.
You know, a year to run. So it's substantial money going in. So for that, they have to have so many staff and infrastructure in place. But yeah, to be able to come back here, and what sold me was the opportunity to work with his 20s group, and there's some really exciting players in that group. You know, Sapri, obviously we've spoken about Libby, who's come through to name, you know, two if we're on about the Phoenix. But then it was a linkage with Fritz to continue working with someone that's going to continue upskilling you. But then the linkage between the 20s, the opportunity to go to qualifiers, hopefully qualified for a World Cup, but also then the linkage with the Olympic cycle tied in with
true.
That, which a lot of these 20s are going to be heavily involved with it.
Yeah.
So to be the link between those two.
The speaking of the Olympics, is there who's coaching, or is that in place? Who's going to be coaching that? Are you involved with that moving into the next Olympic cycle? Will the will it be Fritz and you and Jose, or is there going to bring somebody else in to coach that group of kids?
It'll be Fritz. That's, I think it was put out in his press release when he was announced. So Fritz will lead the Olympics, and I'll be his assistant. I'm guessing. I haven't spoken to Jose, but I'm assuming it would be the same setup where Jose is also.
Yep.
That's, I think, was the plan originally. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
So that always assistant role, is that also part of the attraction? Being an assistant coach to a well-established coach who is coming in and hopefully can do awesome, great things with the team. But is that above and beyond a 20s role, or where does it kind of sit for you?
Probably a bit of both. I mean, I said, how often in your lifetime do you get a chance, one, to go and qualify for a World Cup and put yourself in that position? Mm. And then not only that, but lead a country and lead a group. You know, I'd be proud to do that for both the World Cup. But then I said, for the Olympics, if you get a chance to qualify, and I said they come so close last time with the ineligibility thing.
Totally.
To be able to experience or go through that experience in life, I think, you know, if you get that, those kind of opportunities, you have to grab them. You have to, and I think that's the same for players or coaches.
So where are the Olympics next time? Is it
Tokyo?
Tokyo, yeah. That'd be fun. Going to Olympics in Tokyo. Although with the football, it's played all over the country, so you might see different parts of it.
To be fair, mate, going to the Olympics full stop would be fucking awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where it is.
Yeah, I guess that'll be quite a fun period as a coach, where you get to coach the Olympics and then go through World Cup qualifying and Nations Cup, and then hopefully an intercontinental playoff against, hopefully, Asia, and go from there. That must be a really exciting prospect. I mean,
yeah, I've just drawn it out on the the 20s camp we're holding down in Wellington this week.
Yeah.
So we started yesterday, Wednesday. And the first thing we showed the players was the journey, as we called it, our journey, because it very much is. And we started, you know, February, the start we renounced. And so we've spent the last sort of 6 weeks putting a staff group together, which includes Chris and Mark Oates as the goalkeeper coach.
Mm-hmm.
So then highlighting players, there's a lot of players that aren't in this camp. You know, we were limited to 28 players, so we've still got some to look at. But we then said, April is where we're at now. July will be another camp. Qualifiers will be in August. Now it's important, again, we haven't qualified. You know, we need to go and qualify in what is going to be in Tahiti, difficult conditions and so on. But then the longer term journey over 2 years is, you know, Poland for the 20s World Cup, great opportunity. And a lot of the group have not only had experience of qualifiers, they've also been to 17s World Cups, and some have actually been fortunate enough to be in a 20s World Cup already as well. But then kicking on further, that two-year cycle includes Olympic qualifiers. And like I say, if you can get through that, Olympics. So the next 2 years is hugely exciting for players and staff group.
Mm. Any other questions around the table? I feel like I'm asking lots of questions and not giving anyone else a chance.
Although the only question I'm going to ask is the one that we didn't get an answer out of Greeny on, that I believe he's prepped you on.
I think he's prepped
you. Yeah, I mentioned it to him on Tuesday and he still didn't know the answer, but he said, I'll tell Des to figure it out and answer on Thursday. So obviously me and Pat have been watching that Melbourne victory 5-1 loss. Melbourne City, sorry. Melbourne City 5-1
loss.
You've
seen it seven times.
It's just me misspeaking rather than misremembering. And in that game, the referee stops it to come over and tell Greeny off on the bench for something he said. Do you remember what he said?
So he told me about this last night. So again, we're having our mandate, if you like, and he mentioned it. I said, well, let's look at it. So we've got it up.
Yeah, good.
Oh, good, yeah.
And for the life of us, couldn't work out no. what had been said, but I mean, there wasn't a passage anything before, and you can't see him in the dog out of the dugout.
No.
And then it's only afterwards that the referee comes over. But the only thing we can see, that there's a foul. I think someone gets smacked. I think Ryan Lowry gets fouled a couple of seconds before.
Okay, yeah.
And then there's a similar foul just leading up to the corner.
So he's asking for a yellow.
So I think he's asking what's different with there, because there wasn't a booking. But it was quite funny on the bench, because there's so much that happens. You know, we get told off because you're only allowed one standing.
Totally.
And of course, we're both doing it. So there wasn't a hierarchy of, you know, you stand, you sit. And so they used to tell us to sit down. And again, you used to blame each other. And every now and then, Chris has got this nice guy image, right? But he's got, you know, he's a competitive person. And anyone that was at the game on Saturday would have seen, you know what, the willingness to win. So every now and then, you'd probably say things that you shouldn't. And the fourth official wouldn't know who it had come from, so you'd point at each other.
You know? There was one thing Greeny said, is he said, I got told off a lot of times for things Des had said.
Yeah.
But Des, Chris is sitting down when that happens, and the ref has stopped the game, which is quite unusual to stop the entire thing, to come over and have a word. And he doesn't have a word to you, who's standing up. He goes,
I've quickly run back into the dugout and pointed at him, I think is what it was. But the best ones, even when Ernie was here, so I share one with you. We went to Sydney, and I don't know if they'll thank me for sharing this, but
yeah. We thank you.
Yeah, we've gone to Sydney, and as you're doing, is in coaching, you've got all these different ways of trying to manage games and such. And we'd been with Ernie, working with Ernie for two, 3 years.
Yeah.
And we're 3-1 up in Sydney 2 years ago. And Sydney have got on top, and we're trying to say, look, we recognise they're on top. We need to try and manage the game a little, because, you know, every team does it against us. They slow it down with throw-ins and free kicks or dive. So we're trying to get a signal to Glenn Moss, to his goal kick, just slow down, you know, or go down, you know, whichever. Yeah. Just. And so Ernie's way of trying to get that message across, he turned to me and he said, give Glenn the double fist. And Chris and me looked at each other. I have no idea what that means, and he's staring at me with his two raised arms, and he's then shouting to Glenn, he's got double fist, and I said, nobody knows what that means, you know. So we've ended up calling, like, the fourth official at this point is looking at us thinking, what's going on? So we've ended up calling Manny Musket across to explain what we wanted, and Manny's gone, okay, I'll tell him when I get a chance. And Manny's literally got a couple of steps away from the bench. And by this time, there's a lot of attention being paid by their bench to what's going on. And Manny's just screamed down the pitch, Glenn, when you get a chance. So there's so much that happens on the bench, you know, away from the game. You forget sometimes.
I guess we don't really see that in the A-League, because even at Westpac, there's a lot of noise and things going on. Whereas we kind of hear it at Handy Prem level to a bigger extent, where we can hear everything that the players are saying and interact with the players back. But you don't get that at A-League level because everything's so far away. But I love that these things happen.
On the game on the weekend, because it was so quiet, it was a bit dead at North Harbour Stadium. It's not often, even where I'm standing, that I can hear the interactions between the coaches, but I could hear the interactions between Greeny and the City coach at times, and the stuff they were saying about, you know, the fouls that were going in and the decisions that were made. It was actually quite enlightening. I mean, I'm not going to share what was said.
Was it civil?
Relatively.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes, it was as civil as I would have expected it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is a fourth official there officiating exactly that sort of stuff. So, you know, there's boundaries and stuff. So,
Des, how different is it coaching in the A-League? You're playing against almost known quantities, all the videos available. You can watch any game you want. You can scout any player you want and that kind of thing, compared to coaching in the under-20 setup where you don't have any of that. I mean, going to the Islands, I'd be very surprised if any of their games have been filmed previously. Or even going to a World Cup, it might be quite hard to get your hands on footage of the teams. Is there a different approach you have to take into making it more about what you're doing rather than reacting to the opposition or anything like that?
I think that's exactly it. I think for the Phoenix side, we're always wary and conscious, as you are within the A-League. You know, the players that are going to cause you problems, and generally there's trends for each team and how they try to play. So, of course, you need to spend some time nullifying that. Some coaches will spend maybe one session, others will, you know, from what I was told. I think it was Adelaide spent a fair while actually working on their defensive shape to counter the threat of Burnsy and Roy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's up to every coach on how much time they spend doing that. Or you'll get others that will say, let's not worry about what they're doing, let's focus on us. And I think with the players, like I said, we've got in the 20s, the skill set that we have within that group, I think that'll be our approach. You know, we need to have some defensive structure and idea, but a lot of the focus will be on what we do when we've got the ball.
Mm. And with players like Saprit and Libby and some of the guys at Auckland City and that kind of thing, I feel like there's a real ability in this under-20s team to be able to do that potentially hasn't been there in the past few seasons, where we've had other players that haven't had quite the same amount of professional, in inverted commas, because the New Zealand is not professional, but they're in the professional setup. I feel like New Zealand football is at a point where this could be our next generation of excellent players, where the gap's kind of been, there's a given gap in those players since 2010, especially in the midfield.
Now, the good thing is, I mean, the last one they went to, World Cup, was they got out the group. It's the first time they got out the group away from, obviously, they got out the group when it was based here, but it's the first time they've done that, so they've made history.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to qualify first. That's the most important thing. But if you can get through that, it'll be, have we got the ability to move beyond that, you know? And what is great coming back in this, you know, we've mentioned a couple of players already, it's the amount of good work that's going on with these players around the country. You know, there's so many academies, there's so many, whether it's the Phoenix or there's Wellington-based academies or Auckland-based academies, but the people working in amongst them. So I spoke to Libby this afternoon, and it's the recognition of not just those people that are currently working with them, but what's happened previously.
Mm.
So Libby was at Island Bay until 14th grade.
Yep.
So he's had a lot of people, you know, get him to a certain point. He's then gone and played school football and been through the Talent Centre programme with Capital Football and that side. Then he's come into the Phoenix and he's been there for 18 months.
Yeah.
And he's had a lot of exposure to different people who have hopefully helped add to his skill set and his toolbox, if you like, but more importantly, exposed him to the level of football to see if he can sort of sink or swim. And I think that's what's key about the Phoenix, you know, having that professional entity. You know, we've got people that have got, Callum McCowart's gone into Auckland City and shown that he can, you know, but being able to expose these players to these new environments to test themselves, as we see from Libby and we've seen now from Sapri, that A-League level is the highest level we can get here. You know, but there's a lot of good work going on around the country, and I think we're seeing that now within the players that have been developed.
I guess it makes a little of a shock when you go over to a World Cup and get thrown into a high-intensity game that you're not prepared for because you've never played in something like that. If you've been having that same kind of level of intensity and like the TV cameras are there and there's a big crowd in and you're playing in a big stadium, I guess having that familiarity makes it much easier just to play your natural game.
Yeah, I mean, come down to the camp this week and it's the players, they're so keen. They're attentive, they're keen, and of course they want to be involved, which is great. But the intensity that they're training with, arguably the best players of their, you know, of their time at the moment. So that, for me, there's no better environment for them to currently be within to test themselves.
Going from the Phoenix to Stoke is a question of haves and have nots, effectively. So, what can you tell us about your time at Stoke and the setup they have there, and you know what you learned while you were there and what you're able to implement while you were there?
Again, I go back to resource. I heard David Dome said that there's $1 million been spent on the academy over the past couple of years. And that is true. When we had the PFA over last year to say that the academy and the training ground was within the top three within the A-League at the moment. But then you compare that to not just Stoke, but other, you know, you might go to Barcelona or somewhere or some other European club. The amount of money that's being thrown at these players and the support they get around all of that and what comes with that is huge, you know. Staffing, games programs, far outstrips anything currently available to maybe players here. But again, it's getting there. In terms of what I learned, I was fortunate, to work under two managers in the time that I was there, in both Mark Hughes and Paul Lambert. So you start to recognise and see different styles of that side of thing. And like I said, I ultimately want to be a head coach. So to be in and around those two, you know, excellent head coaches who have got good, you know, you see different ways of working, so you hopefully pick bits and pieces up when you're exposed to that.
What do you think that there are any advantages in New Zealand football as opposed to the English or any of the other European systems that, you know, that might give us an advantage at this junior level? Is there anything that kind of stands out that you can kind of leverage that you wouldn't be able to do in a European setup?
Yeah, I think the population is 4.6, 4.7 million people.
Yep.
For me, that should be a strength, not a weakness, you know, where you've got, instead of having sort of resources everywhere, for me, 4.6 million, I think there's 200,000 players in the country. That should be everybody working together, you know, whether it's schools or it's clubs or it's coaches. So I think this is one of the only countries where you can know someone anywhere in the country, especially in the football circle. And for me, that's a huge strength and an opportunity for people to work together, not just to develop players, but to develop coaches and put systems in place that ultimately lead to, at the moment, which is the Phoenix. It's the professional entity within the club, within the country.
Yeah.
And I think that's the real strength for this country.
I hate to mention this comparison because it's used too often, but that's the Iceland model, where they recognised that they didn't have that structure and had their small enough country they could do all of those kinds of things and did it, and look at where they are now. And there are reasons why they can do it, and potentially we can't do it to the same level, but it's kind of, they've shown it to be a strength, and it'd be nice if everybody could be in the same, pulling in the same direction in the country, which hasn't always been the case previously. I think it's more so now. I think the relationships that the Phoenix have with other groups in Wellington, and even New Zealand football, hasn't always had the great relationships with everybody. But we're in a place now where people are actually starting to pull in the same direction, which is really helpful for everybody to end up with a better product at the end of it, which is players playing at the elite level. I mean, we've got more professionals overseas than we've ever had before.
So you're suggesting a New Zealand version of the Viking clap being something like the Jandal slap?
Jesus.
Can you bring that out in the zone next time you're there?
Start of
next season, just where you get some yellow and black jandals, crack them out in the 80th minute instead of taking your shirt off.
Surely we just take Ernie's lead and go with the double fist.
The double fist jandal slap. Double fist jandal slap. Nah,
that is the name of this week's podcast.
Double fist jandal slap.
I think it will make no sense to anybody. Yes.
There were some questions raised when you put that out, and they go, isn't it this Dez's appearance? What the fuck?
Yes. Potentially not.
I was asked to bring up the fact, and this was from Seamus Martin, and anyone knows that Seamus is the under-17s team manager and has done quite a lot.
Yep.
At the awards night, he did ask me to ask Chris last night, of which I did, who won the competition between him and Paul as to who wore the tightest pants. Because apparently that's a talked about topic.
It's probably
when did we talk about that?
No, we didn't, did we?
I have no idea.
I'm going to
hazard. I'm assuming it was boxy.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So it was, I would say, definitely foxy.
Definitely. Well, so he's gone with the tight pants and the tight shirt.
Yes.
Did he have a jacket at all?
I don't remember the jacket. I just
he didn't wear the jacket. It would have covered up the shirt.
It was his outfit was figure hugging, I think is the appropriate mm-hmm. term, and flattering would be appropriate as well.
Yes. I guess when you've got the body that Dylan Fox has, anything's flattering, really.
Yes. Yes, that's fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember when I was doing those interviews at training, when I was doing a little bit of work for the club, I was asking them like 30 questions in a minute or something. And I tried to do one with Dylan Fox. And you and Chris Greenacre just stood just out of camera shot and were just yelling things at the two of us.
Yeah.
Things are like asking about his hair. When did he get his hair cut?
Yeah. Wait. Was it custom cuts? On
it was not
Kasimowski.
I'm laughing not because of that. I'm laughing because one I've heard about an interview that you did where you didn't know about a player. which I won't go on into, but yeah. The best one that you've done, I don't even think you've realised it, is we used to try and put funny things up in team meetings.
Yeah,
you know, when
sure.
Ernie was here, we, you know, just try and lighten the load a little bit at yeah. times. And you've done 20 questions with Troy Donascus.
Yes, I did.
And I encourage you to go back and listen to it because you ask him if he'd like to have a any living or dead dinner guest.
Yes,
and
yeah.
he says his answer is living. He's made sure that he wants a living guest. So we've used that in a team meeting before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You should ask Patrick if he knows who Paul Gascoigne is.
I do. I do. I just don't know how to pronounce his name properly.
Uh-huh. Yep.
He was before my time. Like,
This is Gazza, in case it's not obvious.
Right, okay.
This is Gazza. He doesn't know who he is.
Maldini and Gazza.
Maldini and Gazza.
And potentially Tony Cascarino as well.
Who? I don't know.
Kimmich after last week?
Oh, yeah, true.
So
what's Gazza's name?
Paul Gascoigne. Is that not... No. Gascoigne?
This is going to be the gift that keeps on giving. No one's going to say it in front of you.
Please, can we just say to everybody that listens, if you see Patrick, don't pronounce Gaz's name correctly. Please, ever.
We're just starting to bring content from our other podcasts across, which we don't really talk about the football anymore in our other podcasts because we've seen the game 8 times, but we talk about lots of other things, and we're just pulling all that content across here, which I'm not sure I'm a fan of. But
I am, because it's funny. You're not a fan of it because you're just getting the shit back down.
It has always been content on this pod to take the shit out of you.
That's fair. That's
yeah.
fair. Actually, the one podcast that you were on before this, I wasn't even there.
No,
you weren't.
And I think Cam was leading the charge there.
No, it was Dave.
It was me. It's the only one I've hosted.
Oh, really?
Well, throw me in the deep end with a guest.
Yeah.
Not only guest, the first Phoenix head coach we've had on the podcast.
Yeah. Ever. Yeah, at the time. That was pretty harsh, actually.
Yes.
Jesus, Patrick.
Yes.
You and your shows.
Yeah. Well, I'm about to wrap up. So if there's any pressing questions you want to ask Des before we move on to the next section, the Stonewall faces, so just know. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Des, before we move on?
No, not at the moment. No,
pretty much. Cool.
Anything you want to ask?
There's lots we could ask. Like, so how are you going to play, and who's the best players in the under-20s?
I'll ask that.
But nah. Let's leave that for.
We'll move on to Kiwis overseas. So I think I'm reading this one this week. So away we go.
Chris Wood looks like he'll play in the Europa League next season after Burnley beat Leicester 2-1 to open up a 9-point gap between the two teams. Wood opened the scoring, putting away a rebound after his initial shot was saved, and his side went up within two goals very soon. Burnley's next match is home to Chelsea on Friday. Marco Rojas is eyeing European competition this next year after 2 wins, saw Heerenveen move into the European playoffs for the first time this season. They beat VVV Venlo 2-0 on Sunday. Rojas got his first start since October, and Rojas started again in their 2-0 win over ADO Den Haag, and Rojas scored both goals. First was a diving header and the second was a tap-in. Rojas was subbed off very soon after. Pex Vol with a team to drop out of the top seven as they failed to turn their dominance into a win in their 1-1 draw against Excelsior, and they went down 2-0 to FC Twente in midweek action. Ryan Thomas played 90 in both games, getting a yellow in the second. It's still possible with both Zvol and Heerenveen to make the playoffs with 2 rounds to go. It was Kiwi Derby in the MLS. Portland Timbers beat Minnesota United 3-2. Portland looked to be in control after scoring twice within a 5-minute spell, but Minnesota played their way back into the game. Bill Tuolama scored an own goal there. Michael Boxall picked up a late yellow card and the game came in 3-2. Portland host New York City on Monday and Minnesota travel to the Sounders. Three Kiwis took the field as Colorado beat, Toronto 2-0. Tommy Smith, Declan Wynn, Kip Colley all started. Colorado opened the scoring, doubled their lead very soon after, although Colley was subbed off in the 39th minute for technical reasons. Colorado traveled to Real Salt Lake Sunday. Elliot Collier was back in the starting lineup for Chicago as they lost 1-0 at home to LA Galaxy. Zlatan Ibrahimovic scored that goal. Vancouver Whitecaps went down 2-0 to LAFC. Stefan Munovic was the busier of the two goalkeepers. Vancouver traveled to supporting KC. Across to Greece, an awful goalkeeping performance saw Giannina go down 3-0 to Xanthi. Femi got his 9th yellow card of the season in all competitions, breaking a 12-week dry spell. Tyler Woods' Tondela picked up a point against Rio Ave as they drew 1-1 away from home. Tyler Wood nearly stashed a winner late on in that game. Joel Stevens and Maya Bevan both made their debut for Husqvarna FF as they lost 2-1 to Oddevold. Stevens started the match and Bevan made a halftime subs appearance. Joel Stevens scored the goal for Husqvarna, cutting in from the left wing before curling a shot into the far corner from the edge of the box. Nico Boxall's V-ball continued to push a promotion place, bouncing back from a 3-0 loss in midweek to beat Federicia 2-0 on Sunday. Nico Boxall started both games, got 61 in the first and 90 minutes in the second. Greg Draper added another goal to the season's tally for his New Saints team. And a 4-1 over Balatown. Across to the woman, Livia Chance played 90 minutes for Everton as they lost their FA Cup semi-final to Arsenal 2-1. Everton faced league leaders Chelsea on Thursday. Amy Phillips got on the score sheet as Spartak Subotica beat Napredak 5-0. Spartak opened the scoring and was up 3-0 within the 15th minute before cruising first the match. They remain top of the league with 13 wins from 13. North Carolina Courage conceded their first goal of the season, but Abby Ursic's side, Washington Spirit, took control to win 4-2 and maintain their perfect start to the season. North Carolina faced the only other beaten team so far, Seattle Arena, on Thursday. Rebecca Stott's Sky Blue FC went down 1-0, courtesy of a penalty given away by Rebecca Stott's fellow defender Erica Skorsky. Sky Blue travelled to Chicago Red Stars next. Katie Bowen's Utah Royals went down 1-0 to Chicago Red Stars and faced a tough trip to North Carolina on Sunday. Kirsty Yellup played 90 minutes as Clip picked up their first win of the season, coming down from 2-0 to 1-3-2. Clip scored twice in stoppage time to pick up a win against newly promoted Lynn. Rosa Gard, Ali Riley's team, could only manage a draw in their season opener against Göteborg with a 1-1 draw. Hannah Wilkinson's Vitzo opened the season with a 1-1 draw as well. And Rhea Percival played 90 minutes as Basel beat Grasshopper 3-0 to close the gap at the top of the league to just 2 points after Zurich were held by Young Boys. They have a potential title desire against Zurich next week.
And I made it through. So there's that. And that's everything for this week, I believe. We don't have any other pressing matters to talk about.
I don't think so.
We'll probably have a full review of the Phoenix season next week and talk about what we need to do over the off season. But
I'm really surprised you guys didn't bring up the canapé issue from Tuesday night.
Oh, I was going to ask about that.
It seemed rude as guests.
It was good canapés. They were very nice.
It was excellent. There just wasn't much of it before the awards. There was shitloads after. I wasn't complaining at all.
I was quite happy with it, actually. The lamb Yorkshire puddings were just immense.
They have, not Yorkshire puddings, but they have lamb shank savouries in the Garage Project tent at the Phoenix.
Oh, really?
And they are delicious.
I thought they had sausage rolls, Patrick.
They do have sausage rolls.
I don't know about the Garage Project tent. I haven't had a protest.
And that will do for this week. Thank you very much, Des, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's very nice having someone with a New Zealand football blazer on, or tracksuit. I shouldn't say blazer, tracksuit, in the room, which is great. And yeah, I'm just doing a terrible job of wrapping this up, even though I thought I was going to do a good job of it.
That's standard.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Paul Gascoigne brings you. Jandal Slap brings you. Double Fisted Jandal Slap brings you. Stoke's greatest under 23 coach brings you.
Avoiding the Spoon brings you.
Getting given Crouchy's jersey brings you.
2,500 people at QBE Stadium bring you.